This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is important to be energy efficient in the data center. Today, most international companies have an agenda to reduce their carbon footprint. A data center running on clean energy also supports customers to drive their reduced carbon footprint. On the show today, I'm speaking to Darren Hawkins, the CEO of Space DC, about how hyperscale data center design innovations can be used with the converged data center environment of today and how to create an ecosystem that suits every vertical of the business sector. Darren, let's start with an introduction.
Hi, I'm Darren Hawkins, currently the CEO of Space DC. Space DC is a data center provider who designs, builds, and operates scalable, resilient, and network-rich data centers throughout Southeast Asia. And our mission is to provide quality data centers for our customers so that they can grow in fast-moving Asian markets.
And how much has the data center industry changed throughout the years, especially in the last decade, Darren?
Quite substantially, actually. 10 years ago, if you had a data center that consumed, say, 10 megawatts of energy, that was considered a very large data center. Almost a hyperscale data center at that scale. However, today, that same data center to be considered a hyperscale in any way, shape, or form would have to be at least sort of 20 or 25 megawatts, and they go all the way up to 120 megawatts. So the scale, even if you don't appreciate what a megawatt is, the scale from 10 to 25 to 120 is quite large. With that, comes a lot more efficiency and a lot more expectations of efficiency in the data centers because when you're talking about those large scales, anything that's not quite efficient becomes quite obvious in the overall facility. It becomes an outlier, so it's quite important to track those.
What's been the catalyst for this surge?
Really, the catalyst for the surge has been driven largely by the uptake of mobile telephony and the advent of cloud. So there's two real keys there. So people, if you think about it, back in the day, you used to go to the bank, and you might go to the bank once a week or once a month, and you might deposit your pay or take your pay out. There'd be one or two transactions. And then you fast forward to today's world where you log on to your bank. You may even log on to your bank three or four times a day. Friends might send you money to pay for dinner last night. Things like that might happen. So you have a lot more transactions. And the banks need to keep those for 7 years. So instead of having one or two transactions a month for a customer, they now have up to 10 transactions a day for a customer, which is a lot more data. Also, phones now consume a lot of megapixels on their cameras. And people are taking lots and lots of photos. They all need to be stored. Companies are being required from phones to store apps and decisions made and purchases and things like that. So there's a lot more information being stored because of mobile telephony, and that's one of our good key indicators of growth markets. The second thing is the cloud. So the cloud has come along, and people are doing so much more on the cloud in terms of transforming their businesses. So previously, companies that found their own IT and their own development infrastructure too expensive, cloud has really brought down the barrier to entry for that. What that means is there's a lot more people doing it at a small scale, and then they can quickly become big scale as well. So if you have a good business idea, obviously it can take off in the cloud a lot easier because you can scale on their platforms. So those two things are probably the biggest defining elements that we see, and obviously there's future drivers coming, and I'm sure we'll get to talk about those soon.
And I think those two examples, it really puts things into perspective, especially the banking as well. But you know, whichever report you look at, it is all stating that the number of devices that will be connected to the internet will be in the billions because of the rise of IoT and the Internet of Things with 5G. This is only the beginning of things.
Yes, it absolutely is. We see it in our homes at the moment, and very few things are connected to the internet. Probably the most advanced things that we have at the moment are Google Home or the Amazon, or you might have a Sonos system, for example. They're typically the things that are connected and interact with the internet, but in the future, everything will. And whether or not, it's not so much, you hear people talk about fridges and how, the fridge will automatically order food when it runs out. That's probably, in my mind, a bit of an extreme example, because it would rely on them knowing what food you're interested in and if your tastes haven't changed and things. But what is really interesting is the motor of the fridge. How's the motor of the fridge performing? Is it running hot? Can the company notice that you've got the temperature setting on the fridge wrong? Mm. Are you getting the most out of your fridge? The same with your washing machine, the same with your dryer. Monitoring devices, how their motors are working. You can preemptive plan maintenance so that devices don't perform badly and cost a lot of money. So to me, the Internet of Things will connect everything, and it'll be in the first layer will be, which I suppose is a part of the 4.0 industrial revolution. They'll connect everything and start monitoring them, improving. And I think you'll see even better advancements then once you can start measuring millions and millions of your fridges or millions of your washing machines. You'll be able to improve the design of them to a whole new level. I mean, they do a lot of factory testing at the moment, but this will take it to a whole new level when you've got sample data from millions of devices all around the world. You know, you'll be able to work out which devices work better in humid climates or dry climates or things like that. So it's a fascinating future we face.
And so a lot of focus is now on the efficiency of the energy used in these data centres. Is this a struggle for data centres? And if so, why?
There is a lot of focus. And some people refer to that as the OPEX. So you generally consume space in a data centre in a couple of ways. One is that you actually take a part of a floor and you put your computers in it. But then when those computers run, they need cooling and they need power, are the two main things. And, of course, how efficient your data center is will depend on how much power was consumed. The more power that's consumed, obviously, the less efficient the data center is. So there's always a drive to improve that efficiency. As I mentioned before, when data centers get big, it highlights inefficiency. So if you've got a data center that's only 10 megawatts, and there's something that's 100 kilowatts of inefficiency, you're not really going to notice it because it's a decimal point. But when it's 100 megawatts, it becomes a multi-million dollar problem for the data center, and it's one that's worthy of being addressed. And so what you find is with the hyperscale facilities, a lot more attention is paid to even the minor details. I think it's a fantastic thing. I think the data centers should be more efficient. I don't think there's ever a perfect design or a perfect end. I think we just keep improving and keep innovating, and I find that really exciting for us as an industry. Certainly look forward to it. When you say it's a struggle, it's like the law of returns. So I think 80% of the easy wins for a data center have been worked out in the last 5 years. So there's things that people do to make their data centers more efficient. The last 20% of efficiency that we're trying to all get to the perfect data center, that's exponentially difficult. So the laws of diminishing returns, is the words that I was thinking of.
What is the 20% that's really difficult?
So once you've done a certain number of things, think of it like an elite athlete. An elite athlete can get into the top 100, and they're pretty good. But for an elite athlete to break into the top 10, they have to just go that extra mile. They have to be truly committed. They have to do real innovative things. They have to be ultimate performance people. That's no different for a data center. For you to get down into the highest performance categories, you really have to have analysed a lot of things and come up with some really good ideas to get there. And you can't just do good ideas. They have to be good ideas that will last 10 or 20 years because that's what we're designing them for. So they can't be fad ideas. They can't be, one day they're there and the next day they're not. They have to last a long time and they have to be reliable. So innovation in itself in a data center is very difficult.
How would this, at the end of the day, drive customers to reduce their carbon footprint?
Oh, it certainly does. So there's two ways that it does that. Quite obviously, if I'm running a data center and my power bill is halved because of the efficiency of the data center, then I'm using half the amount of power, so my carbon footprint is, in theory, less, right? Because I'm just consuming less power. Mm. But the second part of that is, where does the power come from? So there are obviously more intensive forms of carbon produced power and less. So the obvious one is coal. Coal is quite a carbon-intensive power production technique, although it's one of the biggest in the world. And then you go all the way through to like solar and wind and even hydropower, where they're far less carbon-intensive. So, for example, we are very much focused on where does the energy come from that resides in our data center. So some of our projects at the moment are looking at using gas. We're looking at using geothermal power, and we're also looking at using solar power.
I'm speaking to Darren Hawkins, the CEO of Space DC, and we'll continue in just a moment. BFM 89.9.
Buggy Free Minum. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
We're back. My name is Jeff Sandhu, and with me today is Darren Hawkins, the CEO of Space DC, and we're talking about energy efficiencies with data centers of the future. Darren, a lot of data centers are concentrated in Singapore. Why is Singapore thriving in this sector?
Well, of course, Singapore is a business hub for Asia. It has a very stable form of government, a very reliable tax system, and is generally a very predictable place to do business, which is fantastic. And then from a data center perspective, what correlates with that is they've got a lot of internet connectivity going into the island. And that internet connectivity radiates throughout Asia and then provides an opportunity for Singapore to be a hub. Singapore has grown tremendously in the last 5 or 10 years on this, as many companies like Facebook, Amazon and Google all look to centre their Asian head offices in Singapore and in particular their data centres.
Is there a role for other neighbouring countries like here in Malaysia, right? Can we capitalise on this to serve the market better?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's a great opportunity for Malaysia and Indonesia in particular to leverage off Singapore's status. Singapore obviously is struggling to keep up with the amount of growth that's going on, and it's a good opportunity for Malaysia or Indonesia to seize on that and build. I mean, the proximity of Malaysia to Singapore is very obvious. There's a couple of connecting bridges there, and they would make a great launching pad for a data center sector in that area.
Mm. So let's focus a bit on hyperscale. They are inherently different from the traditional data centers that would have support for hundreds of physical servers and thousands of virtual machines. Perhaps you could elaborate a little bit more on hyperscale data centers and why perhaps maybe this is the best system suited for this new decade.
Yes, of course. So I think the traditional data center would have customers that would install their own servers, their own applications, and then consequently they would have their own maintenance teams. So you can think that even if they're a large consumer, so let's say the customer has a megawatt or even 2 or 3 megawatts, with to have 30 megawatts in a data center, you've got to have 10 or 15 of those customers. So you have 10 or 15 maintenance teams, you have 10 or 15 sets of platforms. So you can see some inefficiencies there. Whereas the hyperscalers, they're taking 20, 30, 40 megawatts and they're running one platform with one maintenance team. Of course, it's all virtualized. It's for people like AWS. And then customers can come in and they can do their own installation on that. But it's essentially the hardware and the basic software configuration is the same. And it's at a much higher scale. So that's really attractive for business because if you've deployed something, let's say you've deployed a new app for a phone for your business and the app takes off and before you know it, 1 million people have downloaded it, 2 million have downloaded it, 3 million have downloaded it. It's growing, growing, growing. If you've done that on your own physical infrastructure, you're really going to struggle to keep up. The beauty of being in a hyperscale facility and on a cloud like AWS or Azure is they will scale for you because they've built that capacity into their platform, and you can grow throughout the building. And the same when the app might, let's say the app is only designed to last a month or a few months, it's a competition or something, when it scales down, you can also scale down. So you've not wasted an investment into that IT infrastructure. But the hyperscale facility is certainly designed for those consumers of 10 or 20 or 30 megawatts of power, typically for cloud providers or OTT providers, which is your streaming TV content, where they need a lot of space, a lot of capacity to serve quite a large market.
Mm. What's the market numbers like in terms of how many do you think already have adopted with hyperscale data centres, especially in the regions that you work with, and how much room is there to grow?
Yes, that's a question we get asked a lot because people see the growth of data centres in the last sort of 5 years and they say, well, how much more can it grow? From my perspective, I think we're still at the beginning. And I think we're going to look back in the next 10 years and wonder how we all survived with so few data centres, because there's going to be so many of them. There's just the sheer volume of cloud providers that we see coming out of China, for example, is, you know, they're not even out there, and they're just as big as Alibaba or Tencent, and they're coming out to compete. So over the next 10 years when they start to launch, I think we're going to be surprised by the scale that the market grows to.
What about the existing infrastructure for the current data centers that are already, up and running over the past decade? Is there a lot of investment needed for them to, you know, move into something like a hyperscale data centers, or is hyperscale data centers just something for the newer players, for those who are building from scratch?
Well, I think certainly what we see is your traditional data center consumer, which is typically the large ones of banks and insurance companies. So if you think about a bank, for example, they might start to adopt cloud as one of their alternatives. Mm. So they'll still have their traditional data center. They'll have some mainframe. They'll have some Unix and some, you know, Intel-based processing. And then what they'll do is they'll put some things out on the cloud. They'll start using Amazon or Azure or Google, and they'll start using them for very point solutions, right? Not universal computing, but they might do some niche products onto those platforms. Then they'll build some confidence in those platforms, and then they'll put more and more on it until eventually a large portion of their platform is already on the cloud. So I'm not familiar with a bank that's gone from traditional to cloud in one big swoop, but I am very familiar with banks that have gone step by step onto the cloud as they build confidence in the platform and its ability to deliver and be secure.
And it just shows that it is a continuous journey. It doesn't mean that, you know, the one investment that you do in this new decade is the ultimate investment of all.
Well, that's true. And some people do still have, unique problems or unique business requirements that means they can't go into the cloud or they can't go into a co-located data center. So it's not so much a one business, a one data center fits all. And they have invested quite a lot of money in their old data centers anyway. And you'd certainly want to maximize the return on those assets before you let them go. I mean, we do see some banks sell their data centers and lease them back, which is one way of entering into a cloud market. And that can be done to help facilitate the cost of that migration.
Darren, what are you keeping tabs on? We've spoken about the rise of new connectivity solutions like 5G, IoT, and there's also the Industrial Revolution 4.0, which all would have some involvements with data centers. So what are you keeping an eye out?
Certainly the rollout of 5G, that's very exciting. I think you've marked on a good point there. It'll be fascinating to see how the telcos cope, all the telecommunications companies cope with the rollout of 5G and what it means to business generally. But in addition to that, when we're looking to plan our buildings and our developments, we very much watch population growth trends, the amount of mobile device connectivity that takes place, the deployment of sea cables into a country, and the uptake of business into machine learning and AI.
And, you know, Darren, in the past decade, we've evolved so much. What do you think is the challenges that you foresee businesses having in this new frontier? Are we equipped enough to see this shift actually happening?
Yeah, sure. I see companies, they're being challenged for sure, and they're being pushed to keep up with these growth opportunities. They need to be nimble. They need to look at their expenditure in different ways, and they need to be comfortable dealing with the risks that each country and business environment presents to them. Certainly what I see in the future is that businesses need to focus on what their core business is and be really good at it. So if your business is banking, it's not data centres. So don't do data centres, do banking. And if your business is to provide customer service, then provide customer service. Don't focus on operations. It's just a matter of the more and more I see the input of the modern business world on existing businesses is it's making existing businesses focus on their core business and outsource things that are not considered their core business.
Darren, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I've been speaking to Darren Hawkins, the CEO of SpaceDC, talking about building data centers of the future today. If you've missed any parts of this conversation, you can download the podcast now on the BFM website, the BFM app, or on Spotify. My name is Jeff Sandhu, and this has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.